Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Wednesday, July 5th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
We have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. She'll be here right after we do the market report. So let's get started with gold today. Well, we had a positive day for gold, up 270 for gold today at 1226.90. You have silver down 2 pennies at 1614. Platinum was down 3 at 914. And palladium was down 12 at $848. The USDX today, really not a lot of 96.24. I have to double check on that number because it was a little bit lower for it only to be showing up 0.01. Of course, this is the aftermarket electronic trading that we're looking at. Crude oil is down 205. Big hit on crude oil today at 45.02, but it seems to be trading within the range that I thought it would trade, between $40 and $50. We'll see if it goes lower than 40, but time will tell. The Dow basically unchanged on the day at 21,479. The NASDAQ was up 40 at 61.50, and the S&P was up 3 at 24.32. It's interesting, the 10-year yield now is 2.33%. A little pressure on that today, but down 0.01. It's creeping back up to the 260 level. So we'll see if it has any impact when the Fed meets later on in the month to see if they do a rate increase or not. The euro, of course, pressure on that with the dollar stronger, 113 down 0.05. European and Asian markets were basically flat and unchanged overnight. And after the holiday weekend, there's really not a lot of big changes. We'll talk about some items after the first break. But first, we get to talk to Wendy Wilson, who always does such a great job and brings us such great information. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody. Thanks for that intro. And hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about what doctors are admitting to. For starters, they admit they're drug pushers. They know nothing about the drugs they prescribe. Also, they're admitting they're ignorant about vaccines. And they offer a lot of misdiagnosis, and this is out of their own mouths. Now, recently, the CEO of the drug company Valeant admitted that their primary goal of their pharmaceutical company was profits, according to the COO, Martin Schickel. His first obligation, he says, is to the shareholders. He explains that if they make the shareholders happy by acquiring more drugs and putting them on the market and raising the prices, then that's their main objective. So, that's just basically how they do it. Because the strategy, roughly, of a lot of drug companies lately is to flood the market with many drug options for, you know, the same disease. Now, in 2008, Valeant, for instance, acquired over 100 drugs that had already been approved on the market and increased their pricing by 1,000%. So if we're discerning the real operation of this business, it's simply to buy up existing drugs, jack up the price, rather than invest in research and new medicines. Now, drug development, obviously more expensive than buying existing drugs already approved. And the U.S. government's House Committee on Oversight and Reform is supposed to prevent this kind of exploitation. But they know what's going on there on Capitol Hill. Now, physicians are admitting they really don't know what's inside the drugs they're prescribing, and they have no idea if the clinical trials on the drugs are evidence-based. They admit they have no control over the validity of the tools they are instructed to use in order to practice medicine. So let me give you an example. Medical doctors not in charge of making the drugs, in most instances not in charge of testing them. And a lot of them look at the validity the drug maker claims about the drugs. Now, Dr. Susan Humphreys, for instance, she's a medical doctor, but then she decided to go into homeopathic practice. She said that when she was in medical school and then in residency and then in practice, she said doctors are never told anything about, for instance, vaccines. She says doctors are not taught about vaccines in medical school. They're not taught about vaccines in general. Doctors are not taught about adjuvants. They're not taught about how vaccines are manufactured and what ingredients are used. Doctors are not taught about the potential dangers of the vaccines. And they're simply only given notices on when to give the vaccines and possibly how to give them. Now, Dr. Mark Greer, now he's a geneticist. He said he worked for years in virology and he dealt with vaccines. Now get this. Here's a guy, very smart, 30 years in practice with vaccines. He says he was unaware, and most of the doctors he knew were unaware for over 35 years, that vaccines contain thimerosal and that ingredient was really mercury. They had no idea.
It's pretty astonishing, and it's a tribute to people claim they're just following orders. You mentioned doctors were instructed how to practice medicine. I'm curious who was instructing them on just passing out these drugs, because that's who they're really working for.
Well, they're
handing out the instructions.
They're drug pushers is what they basically are for the pharmacies, you know, for the pharmaceutical company. Well, Greer has published a lot of papers warning now of the dangers of thimerosal. His research says that the mercury in vaccines cause neurodevelopmental disorders and heart disease. How much of that has just kind of mushroomed since, you know, the vaccine schedule ballooned, right? It's crazy.
I know.
Well, let's look at the thimerosal real just a sec. You know, the science labels the thimerosal as a highly toxic compound. And on the bottle of the mercury thimerosal, it says it should not be inhaled, it should not be ingested, and it should not come in contact with your skin. So thimerosal on the container is this hazardous symbol on it. And science is also stating this heavy metal is accumulative and has a toxic effect, especially if you give it to sea life, you know, ocean life. They can't tolerate it. But medical science says it's fine to inject it into babies and humans because they say our body does okay metabolizing it to degrade it into this harmless version of mercury called ethyl mercury. Now, with animal tests, it's proven if you repeatedly inject people with vaccines with mercury in them, it has adverse effects on central nervous system and kidneys because those are the main targets of the heavy metals. So it leaves the brain, get this, your mercury in your vaccine leaves your brain in 14 days, and then it appears in the colon within 18 days of you getting a vaccine. Norway did a study, and they found there's a direct connection between this thimerosal and all these skin conditions people have, and Poland's study concurs and says the same thing. So now Dr. Lawrence Pawlewski, he's a pediatrician. Hey, he said he had no idea that vaccines had side effects and were dangerous. And he says he admits that if doctors want to learn the truth about the nature of vaccines, they have to self-educate themselves because this kind of information comes nowhere near medical schools and residency programs. He says, I had to learn that vaccines are not safe. He says he was beside himself to think that all over the 12 or 15 years in practice before he learned this, that he was actually hurting his patients. He was really upset about that. He says, there's really no testing. After he did research, there's no testing. The injection of the vaccine materials have never been truthfully evaluated, he says. The materials in vaccines have not been tested for different age groups for pediatrics, adults, and seniors. He says, we don't know where the vaccine materials travel inside the body. We don't know how these materials negatively affect immune system, the lymph system, the liver, the mitochondria, the cell nuclei, and your nervous system. He says there have been few published studies on adverse outcomes from vaccines showing the vaccines have not really been tested or proven to be safe for use. And he says telling physicians that they've been wrong and have actually been hurting patients and to admit this is very difficult. He says it took me years as a pediatrician to finally say, I just don't know.
Even that isn't a complete, when he says, I just don't know.
Right.
Even that's not a complete admission. It expresses some doubt, but it's apparently, I mean, I'm not sure the context, but he's not saying I made a terrible mistake.
Right. Right. And, you know, and it goes on and on. Like ER physician Dr. Toni Bark, she says that basically physicians aren't taught to be critical thinkers. And in their training in medical research in school, they're not even taught to really think about the corruption in their field of medicine. So she looks at, and she describes her medical physician counterparts as robots or worker bee doctors, is what she calls
them. I think that's an excellent analogy, and it's evidence of what the doctors can expect. Day is coming when if I have symptoms, I'm going to be able to plug those symptoms into my computer. I won't need the doctor to diagnose my problems.
Right. Yeah, Dr. Kiosk, here we are. You know, she describes medical physicians, you know, she says they're clueless and they tend to regurgitate drug company marketing fodder rather than evaluate therapies at face value, which is scary. Now, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, a lot of people have heard her name. She used to be an ER physician director, and she says that, you know, for years she just thought vaccines contained sterile water and a small amount of dead virus or bacteria. It wasn't until later in her career she started pulling out the inserts out of the packaging that vial came in, and she read the ingredients. She says she was shocked to find out there were animal cow serums in the vaccines, as well as monkey kidney tissue, chicken embryos, canine cells, human embryo cells, chicken and mouse brain cells. Well, I've seen worse. You know, I've seen even spermicides and all kinds of stuff added to it. But and you got to ask yourself, who thinks this stuff up? Have you ever asked that? Well, there's this immunologist called Titania Birkinich. She's from the Ukraine. She says that they're responsible for all the theories in immunity in her profession. And she admits that she and her colleagues have kind of tunnel vision. They live in this ivory tower profession, and they don't read any publications outside of their own narrow realm of research. But she got a wake-up call when she immigrated to the United States, Al, Melanie. She had to produce her immunization record. And when she did that, she happened to notice that when she was a small child, she had two immunizations for measles. But then she got measles when she was 11. And all of her research and all her training that she's been taught is that's impossible, because whenever they encountered a patient that say, hey, I got this vaccine and then I got the disease from the vaccine, they would just say, well, you either didn't get vaccinated or you got a different disease. So now she was faced with the research and, her, you know, did I really have measles? And when she stepped outside the box, she found all this information that she and her colleagues have not been taught. She actually got measles from the measles vaccine.
Well, there's a certain amount of justice in that, but it may motivate her to do the right thing, and apparently that's what she's doing. Is that true?
Yes. She's now lecturing and teaching people about vaccine dangers. Well, let's get to the misdiagnosing part. Apparently, misdiagnosing patients in the U.S. is higher than we think. The National Center for Policy Analysis says a misdiagnosis happens 10 to 20% of the time. 12 million Americans encounter misdiagnosis. And of the misdiagnosis event, a whopping 28% are reported to be life-threatening and can result in death. So we have 40,000 intensive care patients each year that are misdiagnosed. And the Harvard Medical Review found 14% of all those adverse events were misdiagnosed, and 75% of those involved negligence. So misdiagnosis is very common. And we're also told that, the National Center for Policy said that 50% of physicians encounter at least one misdiagnosis per month. And the VA hospital has real problems with that. A 500,000 annually in Texas alone are misdiagnosed. So that's a lot of people, isn't it?
It's a lot of people, and especially it's a lot of people to, I don't know what the charges are, but I can imagine what they're being paid for, what the doctors are being paid. And that's a lot of money to make those kinds of mistakes.
It is, and you know, there's always that second opinion. They stated that 88% of patients who got second opinions went home with a refined or different diagnosis, and it changed their care plan. Mm-hmm. So here's a quote from Dr. James Nason, Mayo Clinic: effective and efficient treatment depends on the right diagnosis. We know 1 in 5 patients will be incorrectly diagnosed, and this is troubling. Well,
like having people shooting in your window, you know, that's troubling. No, it's not troubling. It's scary.
Well, Dr. Newman, he's a professor of neurology, John Hopkins School of Medicine. He says misdiagnosis happens all the time. This is an enormous problem, the hidden part of the iceberg of medical errors, which dwarf other kinds of mistakes. Goodness. And then also Dr. Mark Gaber, Society of Improved Diagnostics, says arrogance and overconfidence in our abilities is our major problem. Doctors have gotten a pass too long when it comes to a diagnostic accuracy. Physicians don't realize how error-prone they are. So tell it like it is what I say. So, you know, I look at it, you know, scientific medicine is becoming less evidence-based, and it's becoming more theory and a belief system. What do you think, Al?
I agree with you 100%. You see something like that in the legal system. People are not taught to think.
Right.
They're taught to regurgitate whatever someone else told them to think. And if you're going to deal with someone who claims to be a doctor, it seems to me you want someone who's capable of real perception and applying it in a way that is not necessarily creative, but at least, you know, objective, not just doing what he was told. And I know it's a gray area to some degree, but just the same. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be wrong 20% of the time, I don't know that you deserve the pay you're getting. Especially when people's lives are at stake.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and of course the pharmaceutical industry is not helping us out. It's all about, you know, profits, and it's not about patient care and recovery. And of course they tell patients it's just a business, don't take it personal. I don't know how personal you can get with your life on the line. But
somebody's poking holes in your body or whatever, and they don't take it personally.
Don't take it personally.
I take it personally, you know.
Well, I think people should look at strengtheners rather than, you know, symptom management.
I agree with you.
And so if anybody's interested, we have a free catalog we can give.
I'm sure they are.
Yep. And the number to call for a free product catalog from Apothecary Herbs is 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. And, of course, the website is thepowerherbs.com.
One of us has to get our clock fixed.
Well, you know, I just
because I've got 45 seconds to go till the break,
fine.
And you're ready to run off for lunch right now. And
I got lots to say still, you know, because
you got 35 seconds.
Well, you know, Michael Pearson, he's the COO of Valent Pharmaceuticals. He says if products are sort of mispriced and there's an opportunity, we're going to act appropriately in terms of doing what I assume our shareholders would want us to do. My primary responsibility, he says, is to the shareholders, and we can do what we want to do. And
that tells us there's something deeply wrong with the legal system. The law should be the doctor's first and the pharmaceutical's first obligation is to the patient, not the shareholders. We've got to let it go at that, Wendy. Again, that's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Give her a call. She's got good products. Give her a call. We'll be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Attisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, did you know we just, yesterday was July 4th.
No kidding.
On the weekend, yes. And gas prices. AAA said Monday that the national average of 2.23 per gallon was the cheapest gas has been all year. The last time gas prices were this low in Independence Day was 2005. And Trump tweeted Tuesday that gas prices are the lowest in the U.S. in over 10 years. He would like to see them go even lower. So that's a good sign. Not quite sure how many travelers were on the road. With the holiday being in the middle of the week, you know, a lot of people just had that one day off. So unless they extended the as Monday as the holiday, the we'll have to see what the actual travel number was for the 4th. So the good news, gasoline prices are lower.
They're a lot lower, really. It's almost phenomenal. I mean, when you calculate, I can remember when gasoline prices were 25 cents a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that was about 50 years ago. But when you calculate what the dollar's worth today compared to what it's worth then, I guess, I'm going to guess, is after you correct for inflation, I'll bet you that gas is perhaps cheaper than we've seen it at any other time since World War II.
I do have an inflation calculator here. And, you know, as we move along, I'm going to pop in the 25 cents. How many years ago did you say that was, Alfred?
I can remember when I was like 19 years old. So it'd be 50 years ago, thereabouts.
All right, give me a year,
64.
Okay, 64. And we bought an item for 25 cents. Mm-hmm. And the cost of them today, let's calculate, would be $1.97.
Well,
so we're really not that far off.
No, it's about on target. But back then, a quarter was worth 25% of an ounce of silver. They still had silver dollars in circulation at that point in time. You could redeem paper dollars in silver. To me, a quarter at that point, when you calculate against silver, it would translate into the equivalent of something like a $4 or $5 bill today. And in fact, we're paying $2. So your inflation calculator doesn't calculate the same way I do, Melody.
Well, of course.
I don't want to say that you're wrong, but I don't think you calculate
like anyone.
But what's interesting, I plugged in the 2005 level that they were comparing it with, and actually the price of gasoline would then be $1.58. So the price is actually higher today, even though the price was the same. So anyway.
So you say, Melody.
So just a little. So good news. Not quite sure who to congratulate for the lower prices, but
well, it's a tribute to the fact that they've put so many rigs in the ground, they found so much oil, and they're in the process of finding so much more. The price is dropping at the same time, well, largely because the global economy has pulled back dramatically from where it was in 2007, thereabouts. It has not regained, if you can believe, the Baltic Dry Index, how many tons of cargo are being moved globally. A good indication that, I don't know, 5-10% compared to what we were doing back 8 or 10 years ago. That's evidence the global economy is in deep trouble. We don't hear about it much, but it suggests that there is a big problem. And as long as that's true, there won't be significant demand for crude oil, and the price is going to tend to drop until either the global economy is resuscitated or the supply of crude oil is dramatically diminished, maybe by war. Other than that, I think it's going to continue to fall.
Well, you know, Volvo, which is the first major auto, which is an automaker, and it is Chinese owned. It's just weird to think of all these
Volvo.
Yeah, it's a Chinese owned automotive group. Yeah, they
so
came.
Isn't Volvo made in Sweden? Is it Norwegian or Swedish?
Well, you know what? Buick used to be U.S. too, and now one of their vehicles is totally made in China. You had Chrysler. Who knows who owns Chrysler anymore?
Yeah, I understand.
I think the Italians do, but I'm not really sure anymore. So, yeah. It's not the same as it once was, but Volvo came out, and they're the first automaker to abandon the combustion automobile. They made the announcement that all new Volvo models from 2019 would be either fully electric or a hybrid. That's a big statement. To start manufacturing.
No, I agree, but it's the way the wind is blowing.
But what's interesting, though, is when you think their target of selling 1 million electric cars and hybrids by 2025, they says, when we said it, we meant it. And this is how we're going to do it. They said they were going to launch 5 new electric and hybrid vehicles between 2019 and 2021. 2 of the new models would be built by Polestar, the performance car unit that Volvo was spinning off as a separately branded electrified global high-performance vehicle. Now, I do think hybrids have a better opportunity of being melded into the economy than a fully electric vehicle. But you kind
depends
of wonder
how far you want to drive.
But you also wonder. Well, they're very expensive. They're still high dollar vehicles. Not everyone can purchase a Volvo. So I believe their competitor would be Tesla. I think that's who they're going to market.
Well, that might be who they
market their vehicles to is the Tesla owner, but this is. I always have to ask what the motivation is, other than just
more money. Ooh. Huh. More money. Ooh. Follow the yellow brick road.
Perhaps. But in today's world, I'm not so sure that's necessarily. I'm sure that's, obviously the most obvious, but if anybody looks any deeper into who owns these companies and where they're being manufactured and who they're geared to, and if there's any type of perhaps trade disagreements in the coming future, plus the petrodollar and so forth, kind of makes you wonder if there isn't something else that they're readjusting for and looking to captivate if something happens to the petrodollar and so forth. So, I think
it's interesting.
I think the picture is always bigger than just more money, but always follow the money.
Yeah, there's other justifications, but to me it's where's the money? All right, these are interesting justifications, but which ones lead us to more money? And those will be the justifications we tend to look at. What interests me is that Volvo is made for cold climate. Up in Sweden or Norway, I don't remember which one. I think Sweden is what rings my bell. But that means you might not have to have a heater in your electric automobile to keep the oil from coagulating from the cold weather, right? But you're still going to have some kind of heater for your battery if it's going to be all electric. And they're not going to get away from it. They're still going to have to be able to plug that vehicle in at night or when it's not being used in order to keep at least the battery warm enough, unless they've got some sort of a battery that functions even when it's cold.
Volvo's parent company is Zhejiang Geely. So it's no longer
Polish operation, huh?
Yes. Now, so again, it's very confusing anymore who owns what and who manufactures what. Who owns Jaguar, Volvo, Chrysler, all of those vehicles. Something who does own
probably
them.
Warren Buffett, if you wanted to get right down to it. It's probably Warren Buffett owns all of them. He owns most of them, and Soros probably owns the other 40%.
BMW owns Mini and Rolls-Royce. Fiat owns Alfa Romeo, Chrysler, Dodge, Ferrari, Jeep, Maserati, Ram, and SRT. Ford Motor Company owns Lincoln and a small stake in Mazda. General Motors owns Buick, Cadillac, Chevrolet, GMC. GM has a controlling interest in Opel and Vauxhall in Europe and Holden in Australia. Actually, what's interesting is U.S. Treasury Department, I don't know when this was actually dated. So again, you just don't know who owns what. Volkswagen, they own Audi, Bentley, Lamborghini, Porsche, and Volvo.
You can almost bet, what that also indicates? When you list those names, in many instances, not all of them, but the people that own the company are not necessarily living or nationals of the country where the company is essentially established. This is globalization. All right? We have people in China that own plants in Sweden and people in Sweden who own plants in the United States and
Absolutely.
People in the United States who own plants someplace else. But you almost wonder why these people don't just buy companies in their own state, and the obvious answer, I guess, is they can see deals, and they're able to move on a global basis, so they see a good deal, they take it. But I wonder, are we well off having the number of actual owners of automobile manufacturing facilities? There might be 24 that essentially own them all, and maybe less than that. When you get down to the actual owners, not necessarily an individual man, but an individual corporation. I don't know, it's just strange. It's like Wendy was talking about how pharmaceutical companies, big pharmaceutical companies, have been buying up the smaller pharmaceutical companies and creating conglomerates. Same thing's happening it's not a new phenomenon, but is it a good phenomenon, regardless whether it's new or old? Is it good or are we...
Look at what the banks are doing. There's been very few failures of banks only because they're being bought up by the bigger banks.
Yeah.
So eventually, you're going to have, one or two huge corporations that own everything. And most of those bigger corporations are going to be state-owned by the Chinese, by, some other government. So, and I don't understand how people think this is going. I don't know how it's going to change. How can you go back?
Well, one of the problems with this having just a handful of people that own, for example, all the media outlets, and that's an exaggeration, but regardless, you don't have as much competition. And I think, and if we believe that competition is good for, the economy, good for the people, good for lowering products and increasing the quality of products. When we have more corporations buying more smaller corporations, and there's 20 different names, but they're all run by the same corporation, are they really different? Is the differences between those 20 apparent competitors, are the differences really significant, or they just change the hood ornament on one vehicle and put a new hood ornament on another vehicle and sell it at a different price?
You have Walmart move into little communities, eats up all the mom and pop shops. So who's to, hold Walmart to any sort of price controls? You have the same thing with gas stations or grocery stores.
Well, I don't care what prices they have, but what concerns me is that when a corporation comes into your neighborhood, into your state, your city, your county, whatever, they set up a new business, they're selling a product. I don't care what the prices are exactly. What I do care about is what happens to the profits. And if the profits stay local in your community, that's a good thing. I have no problem. Come on down. Set up your factory. Set up whatever. As long as the profits that are to go to ownership go into your community. When they start going into another community, going into another state, going into another nation, those profits, they are the lifeblood of prosperity. And when you pull them out of one country and take them to another country where the owner is sitting, there is a problem. They begin to predate on the country where they're located, and they enrich the country where the owner is sitting. There's a problem, and it's something that, I don't know, it's just dangerous. This whole business of globalization is dangerous because in the end, it will put a bunch of millionaires living someplace or billionaires living someplace and the rest of us living in mud huts around the rest of the world.
Has that already happened?
No, to some degree. It's an exaggeration, but
I think it's already happened.
Here we've got more good news for people. Here's something from Technocracy News and Trends. It says, Hampton Creek, lab-grown meat will hit the supermarket shelves by 2018, Melody. The article says, artificial lab-grown meat is deemed to be the next big food technology. It's unclear if there will be any market acceptance of the products for those consumers who already reject GMO foods. Artificial meat should prove to be repulsive. Hampton Creek, the Silicon Valley startup, says it's working on growing meat in a laboratory. The food startup revealed to the Wall Street Journal that it plans to get its meat on into stores by 2018, long before its competition. There's only a small group of global startups vying to create clean meat, beef, chicken, or seafood engineered in industrial plant vats, right? Just like Mother used to make. In industrial vats to taste like the real thing. There is something about, here, I'm going to generate a product. It tastes like ice cream, Melody. It's not. But we can call it ice cream just the same. Any case, my song for the day is good, good. That's what lab-grown meat is, good.
It's not any different.
I can hardly wait.
It's not any different than some of the stuff that McDonald's use for their chicken nuggets and so forth.
It may be. At least, I don't know. Parts is parts. I get that. Parts is parts, but just the same. The parts were derived from real chickens, so far as I know.
Well, I'm not so sure. I don't know how you get that pinkish hue to it. It's just like, oh my gosh. Anyway.
We got another one we can talk about when we come back. Edible insect farms creep closer to reality in Europe. Bugs. It's what's for dinner.
We talked about that once before. Wendy did on the program about, and hey, there's a lot of nutrition. So a lot of protein.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about crude oil prices falling.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it when we return in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstone.
Tell me again tonight. Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, we were having a disgusting discussion during the break about factories and the things you eat, even as simple as a potato chip and a pickle. I can only imagine the things that go into the fine foods.
There's something to be said for cooking your own food.
Yes, there is.
There really is something to be said. It's a lot cheaper. It's a lot better for you. It takes a little time and the rest of that sort of thing, but I think in the end, if you calculated the amount of time you spend driving to the doctor if you're going to be eating processed foods, and the amount of time you spend cooking if you're going to eat homemade, home-cooked food, I'll bet it kind of balances out. And I would rather spend the time cooking at home than spend the time driving riding in the ambulance to see the doctor.
Hmm.
Yeah, what have I got here?
Crude oil today was ending the longest winning streak for the year, and the big reason for this was Russia. We're going to blame Russia. Russia did it. Russia was said to oppose any proposal to deepen OPEC-led production cuts. Futures for oil dropped 4.1% in New York, the most in 4 weeks, after 8 straight sessions of gains. Russia doesn't want to change the current deal because any further supply curbs would send the wrong message to the market. And we saw the U.S. dollar strengthened. We saw the commodities denominated in the currency drop. Russia pretty much threw cold water on rumors of additional cuts. This was the from Bob Yager, Director of Futures Division at Mizuho Securities, USA in New York. The American Petroleum Institute is due to issue weekly U.S. inventory numbers this afternoon. I don't have those, so... again, just another damper in the, just supposedly Russia said, and it has the impacts that we see for commodities. And so that's why oil dropped $2 today. So we'll have to see what the rest of the week does. Perhaps we'll see a little bit of a drop in our gasoline prices, and hopefully that.
Oh, yeah. We'll see a drop, whatever happened this week. To drop the price of oil, we will see a drop in our oil prices maybe by Christmas.
Well, you know what's
funny?
But
if anything makes the price of oil go up this week, we will see our gasoline prices rise no later than next week. Maybe this week,
absolutely.
No later than next week. I may be exaggerating a little bit. They're a lot quicker to raise prices than they are to lower them.
And of course, if they keep the oil, if gasoline prices low enough, long enough, there's room to add taxes. So
there's always room for taxes, Melody. It's like Jell-O. You go talk to your congressman, they'll explain to you, taxes are like Jell-O. There's always room for more taxes.
Yeah, I know. So if they taketh away in one area, they're going to giveth in another. So
they're going to pretend, they're going to promise to give us in another, Melody. They're not actually going to give us anything. They're just going to promise. We're going to take your money now, but we promise. Scout's honor. We promise we're going to give you something special as an entitlement later on.
I just want to, and I don't want to, go for any depth of time on this. I did have a little bit of a special that I wanted to bring to the listeners, but You know, when we talk about the administration, we talk about Mr. Trump, whether we like his tweets or we don't like his tweets and what they mean, what they could mean, you know, in relationship to, you know, what the, you know, when you're making deals and so forth. I don't follow anyone. I read various articles. I read various reports. I read the pros. I read the cons. And I come to my own conclusion. I'm not a cheerleader for anyone. And there's sometimes we get caught up in hope so much. And I don't have hope in, you know, I don't keep my hope in man. You know, I look above, I look up for my hope and so forth. So when I say things, it doesn't mean I'm against this administration. Yes, I want this administration to succeed. There have been some good things, but let's read through some of those good things, and I'll guarantee you I can find things that, you know, is perhaps a little shady. And maybe it isn't all the truth that you want to believe it is. I'm just here to report what I see as the truth. And I look for the truth. And because you can find the truth. And again, I'm not against this administration. I'm not against Mr. Trump. I do hope he succeeds. But I do understand the financial conditions of this country. And I do understand the financial conditions on how it's going to affect each and every one of you. And that's what we're here for. When we talk politics, it's to show how politics is going to affect the prices of gold and silver and why you need it. We're not here to criticize the administration. I question. But again, I want them to succeed. But you know what? Let's have some term limits discussions. Let's limit these terms of these politicians so they can't be in there 30, 40, 50 years, even 20 years they shouldn't be in there. We can't change anything in this country until we can change something like that in our monetary policy. What about the Patriot Act and some of these other deals that have gone through that have stolen and changed our liberties and freedoms? How about addressing those, some of those? So a lot of the things that have been done are just, you know, artificial, you know, they're good. They're not bad. But what
well, there
what
may
do
be.
They really mean? Yes, Al?
You know, Trump, I will give Trump credit for, I think he's trying to do what's best for the American people, and I don't even know that that's true. But I wouldn't give Hillary, I wouldn't believe for a minute that Hillary was even concerned with the American people. I'm sure she regards us as riffraff and the great unwashed, and she wishes she didn't have to deal with any of us.
I agree.
Trump to me is a better candidate than
Absolutely.
Hillary. But you can make it that what you want. You got a dog named Ruby. Ruby might have been a better candidate than Hillary, at least in my opinion. I have my doubts. But my position on this is that unless you could elect the Messiah to be president, there are such enormous problems facing this country that no one is going to be able to deal with them effectively. These problems may not fully manifest for another several years, but they could manifest this year. Nobody knows when this is going to happen, but the debt, for example, is the one I harp on more than anything else. It is enormous. It can't be paid. We can't pay it. We can't cancel it. What are we going to do with the debt? All right, it's a terrible problem, and every Congress we've had, every 2 years you get a new Congress, every Congress we've had for the last 40 years or more has been in on increasing this debt. And they have now finally put it off and put it off and put it off until, surprise, we're the generation that is going to be the lucky guys and girls who wind up being saddled with this incredible debt and watching our economy perhaps crumble around our heads because, you know, we drew the black spot.
And I know the Keystone, you know, one of the accomplishments was the Keystone Pipeline, you know, and so all the steel was supposed to come from U.S. Well, it was already in the agreement that the steel would come from the 65% of it anyway would come from the U.S. So, you know.
The Keystone Pipeline, I saw a report that the Keystone Pipeline may fold up anyway.
Yeah.
Just
exactly.
Because a lot of the people who were going to use it are no longer interested in transporting their oil. They don't have that much. The demand is not there. They don't see this as justifiable. Keystone Pipeline may turn into something of a boondoggle, just because, at least for a while, because nobody, what do we need it for?
I started looking up the various regulations, and there was one, a regulation that they eliminated for companies that could bid for government contracts if they had a negative report on employees or, you know, some shady dealings, or I don't know the exact wording of it. I was going to have it here for the program. Well, it's great to eliminate regulations. Most of your big companies will probably have a few of those on their records, because when you're big enough, you're going to have some disagreements somewhere, somehow along the line. So that frees up for bigger business. Now, maybe that's going to hurt the little guy, because the little guy isn't, you know, he's not going to have those many problems with employees and so forth. So to me, how does that help bring more jobs? It helps the big companies again. And this is just my analysis.
I don't know that that's true. I think a lot of these regulations, not necessarily all of them, but a lot of them are inspired by big companies to restrict competition from smaller companies. You can't get into the business. I mean, I've talked before, back when I was a kid, something like 25% of the people were self-employed.
Let me ask you a question. Name me one regulation that has been eliminated. Tell me about it.
Don't know. I'm not in business about.
That's what I started to investigate. What are the actual regulations that were eliminated? This was one of them. And I started, you know, I just started doing this, so I don't have a complete report, but I will, because I wanted to know which regulations were, I want to know, instead of just verbally casting out, oh, you know, regulations are being thrown. Well, which ones? How does it affect the companies? How is it going to grow employees? I want to know. And that's what I started investigating. And this just happened to be one of the regulations. So I'm not so sure if it actually does inspire more, you know, employee growth and so forth.
Actually, it could, because if it's conducive to small companies going into business, small companies are generally where most employee growth takes place. You start out, it's just you and your partner working in a garage. Pretty soon you open up a little building. You hire 3 or 5 people. That's not the same thing. Doesn't happen with the major corporations on the same percentage basis. If the elimination of regulations make it easier for small operators to go into business. You don't have to pass all the licenses.
I want to know what those regulations
pass
are.
I have no idea.
So we can't really talk about regulations until we know what they are.
Sure, we can, Melody.
No, we can't.
Yes, they can. They talk about it in the newspapers. They talk about it all over. It's a
regulations.
Topic of,
well, which ones
conversation.
Are they? Which ones are they?
The good ones.
So anyway, I'll be bringing that to the, you know, to the program, to, because I'm curious. I'd like to know which regulations they are.
And what makes you think they're going to tell you? Mm-hmm. Answer me that, Melody.
I don't think it should be that difficult to find them.
Oh, it depends on what the answers are. It may be the regulations that you can't put bubble gum under the seat at the theater. Maybe that's one of them that they've canceled.
Well, I tried to bring you one, but you have ignored it. So,
they canceled the regulation that said I had to pay attention to those sorts of things. That was a previous regulation. It's been eliminated.
Anyway, we're just about out of time, and I want to bring the listeners a special for
three
today.
And a half more minutes.
We have a Mint State 62 $20 Liberty gold piece. Remember, it provides you privacy, protection, profit. They're beautiful, and they're selling at 1 ounce gold eagle prices. And in this package also has $50 face value of 90% silver, and the total cost is $1,940, and that includes all your shipping costs and insurance. So make sure you give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The Mint State 62 $20 Liberty gold piece and $50 face value of 90% silver, $1,940. So make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Our newsletter went out today instead of Monday. It just got a little late in the afternoon, and I figured everybody was off on holiday and probably got flooded with emails wishing you a happy 4th. So I thought, well, let's just hold it for today. So make sure you look in your mailbox for our newsletter today.
Still got a couple minutes left. Here's an article from MarketWatch. It says low-income families spend 40% of their money on luxuries. People who make the most money spend the biggest chunk of their income on luxury goods, but even the poorest households spend a significant amount for luxuries. And they divide, they distinguish luxuries from necessities. The wealthiest families spend 65% of their income on luxury goods and 35% on necessities. Middle-income households aren't far behind. They spend 50% on luxuries and 50% on necessities. Even the lowest-income families spend 40% on luxuries and 60% on necessities. And the reason I'm bringing this to your attention is they divide the world between necessities and luxuries, and I would like to point out that gold is both. And it's one of the few things where you can sit back. It is both a necessity. If things go badly, you're going to want that gold. And at the same time, it's a luxury, and it's a luxury that everyone can afford at current prices. We are able to buy gold right now, physical gold. You can get it for paper gold prices. The way the world is actually structured, they are giving the gold away. Sooner or later, you know, we won't be able to buy gold at paper gold prices, but that's the market is determining the price of paper gold. And we go along with the program, we say, oh, well, paper gold, physical gold, what difference? Big difference. You're getting to buy physical gold right now at paper gold prices. And if you are sensible, prudent, wise, and smart, you'll take advantage of that opportunity. We're out of time. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.